some other kind of a law, not Moore's law. Back to you, Corey.
Oh yeah, that's why I say we've been extremely spoiled. Of all the technologies out there, I think the one that has progressed the fastest over the last 40 years is solid state electronics. And Moore's law was just kind of a throwaway, idle observation. It had to be kind of redefined over the years, and now it's completely in the garbage. Poor Intel is fighting for its life. AMD is trying to play king of the mountain, but the problem is that we're reaching a point with solid state physics where the parts are getting too small and the quantum effects are getting in the way of things. And in order to have them work the same way, you would have to supercool them, which is not cost effective. And so you have to play all kinds of interesting games of stacking your chips on top of each other rather than shrinking them anymore. And as many people noticed, the speed increase stopped, I think, 15 or 20 years ago. Megacycles per second with clock speed. Now they're in the 4-point-something gigahertz cycle, but you're not going to see anything faster than that because we've sort of hit a limit as far as our present technology is concerned. But yeah, I wish battery technology was a fraction of the accelerated development of solid state. You would have instantly rechargeable supercapacitors. You know, you would plug your Apple iPad into the wall for 3 seconds and it would be good for a week and a half. But that isn't how technology works.
WB2K.
Yes, Cap.
I think a lot of the increased processor power now are being done by increased parallelism rather than a faster clock speed. You're either getting more processors or your single processor is multiple tabs, and then at some point revision branch, you figure out which one is the decision that was taken and basically flush all the other results out from your path. Of course, that brings the problem of there have been a number of reports on content of all this stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with you. When they realized that they were not going to be able to improve the clock speed, the next direction that they had were parallel CPUs on the same chip with fast channels of communication between them and sophisticated electronics to guesstimate what the next step would be, and so they have real CPU threads, and they have virtual CPU threads. You know, as a guy with 16 threads, it's very nice to have, and it improves things a great deal and takes the place. Also, they're trying to shrink the chips because as they shrink the chips, they are able to lower the voltages, and they're able to then lower the heat loss and have a much more efficiently run CPU that doesn't need a thermal transfer device as powerful as if they were using higher voltages with bigger chips and such. So it's multi-factor, but multi-threading has been a panacea for the last 15, 20 years. You know, I mean, AMD is going a little bit crazy with their thread rippers. I don't know how many threads you can actually put on a chip, but I'm sure AMD is going to teach us. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Longmark Technical Mess. So if you have a technical question or a science question or even a general medical question, you just want to bounce it around or discuss some topic, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
Smile. Bio-NLP. battery.
Static. I lay the horizontal and it stops. If I, as it wasn't making the connection.
Okay, well, let me ask, is the battery charging or is the battery just sitting there by itself? Okay, that's a strange one. It shouldn't really be doing much when it's sitting there. I mean, there are safety circuits and cell balancing circuits, but they should be functional when you're charging them, not when they're sitting there. So I'm at a loss to explain that. If anyone has noticed a battery that's just sitting around that produces interference, I would love to hear that one.
Roy, WS Glenn.
Yes, Paul.
Is there some sort of USB port on that thing? You know, for somebody to put an accessory in? That would do it, you know, the digital circuit in there. They bring it from 12 volts down to 5 volts.
Well, I mean, I'll ask Mike, but most likely it doesn't. It's not a USB charging device. It's just a 13 volt DC battery. Probably it has a power pole connection to it, and it's unplugged because it's not being used. Right, Mike?
Correct. I will say it's not battery pack 2 that it put it in.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul. One second. I would just throw out the vague possibility that what might be going on is it's operating as a partial RF shield and it's blocking one of the reflected RF sources to your antenna. But that's just a throwaway idea. Paul, what do you want to say?
Better detect if he's got an AM radio laying around somewhere. Put it on AM, on a weak station, or no station at all. You know, it'll verify the static. You'll hear it. It's almost here, but 60 cycles type of noise. You can pick up the frequency that it's sending out by ear sometimes. That would be a good test to take an AM radio and around. You know, I'm sure the same thing's going to happen. It'll be real, you know, even more profound on AM than an FM 2 meter.
That's an option. If you have any kind of a separate antenna for it that's detachable, that you could run a little bit of coax. So if you could move the antenna itself and just kind of move it around the room and see, again, unless the circuitry in there is broken in some way. Because I don't think it's really supposed to do a heck of a lot when it's just sitting there. It is really not designed to do a heck of a lot. So I'm still thinking that it might be more of a case of simply being an RF shield, and it's dropping your received signal to the point where you're below full quieting on it, and that's what the noise is from.
Yeah, what's weird about this radio is it has a very odd static. A bunch of times I would push the button and it's static. On the dial, static. That was kind of normal.
Okay, it's possible, but it's always, in my mind, even if it's the radio, the radio's responding to something else. Otherwise, it would just do that without the motion. The same way turning a dirty knob will give you noise, and turning any kind of control that's not a clean electrical contact will introduce noise. So I'm still in the back of my head. I'm trying to figure out how a quiescent lithium iron phosphate battery just sitting around with its safety circuits and not much else going on inside of it can really cause even a flaky radio to be flakier. So that's interesting. I have never heard that before with a BioNO. I know a lot of people, I tend to suggest it to other people. They seem to be happy, but that's an unusual one. I guess it's another one I'll have to Google, but for some reason, I don't think I'm going to find anything. But I will look.
Again, the weird part is tonight on this net, I tried it, and it's what I don't understand is why turning the flat, even here, flat, horizontal, not the set. And this, I know, it this helped by the computer last 2 weeks talking to me.
I hate to hear this sound like a broken record, but I would really think that what's going on is your signal strength is just above full quiet. So any little change in it that drops it down, any coupling, inductive coupling from a speaker, any shielding from a lot of circuits and contacts and such will drop it down enough to give you that background noise on other than today, where the signal may be just ever so stronger, so you have a little bit of a range to play with before you get the lack of full quieting on your signal.
Boy, he needs an AM radio. That would eliminate the possibility that it's the HD.
But the way it sounds, he talks about when he goes past speakers and such. So I don't think it's the battery. I really don't. But you know, it wouldn't cost you anything. I'm sure you have an AM radio someplace around there, and just turn it up and you know, move it around the battery. And I would pretty much bet you're not going to hear anything personally. But you know, unless you start to discharge the battery, then anything is possible. But if it's just sitting there quietly, not connected to anything, not draining any current, I can't see how it would produce RF. But
yeah,
we'll see what happens. So please, if you figure it out, come back and tell us, because I'd love to know.
Okay, guys, I'll grab.
Hey, Roy, WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Think you could have a noisy local oscillator inside that radio, and then when he puts it near the battery, it starts reflecting off the side of the battery, sending a signal back to his radio, and then he had glitches with it anyway, and now that signal is getting into the radio, starting his static all over again.
Yeah, it's possible, but theoretically, that would be kind of simpler to figure out. You just probably take some aluminum foil and wrap your AP, and that local oscillator would drive you crazy. So that's even easier than getting an AM radio, getting a couple of a square foot of tin foil.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah, I still my favorite solution is that his reception is just above full quieting. And any kind of change, and he's getting that not necessarily to point contact, but the sum of all reflecting signals in his room. And so anything that absorbs or intersects with some of those reflections might present to him as an increase in the background noise.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay. Thank you, Roy.
Okie doke, everyone out there, if you got any other questions or comments on any of the subjects, please feel free. Hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign. Yeah, sure, Sam. Please, ask.
Hey, this is good. You're doing good. Hey, I'm upset. Don't tell me my radio saying it's a good deal to buy. They don't make them anymore. I apologize. Then.
Well, yes, Sam, it's quite possible. There's a lot of different modulation schemes that you could use for radios. You know, in the beginning, there was the continuous wave, CW. And then God said, let them hear themselves, and amplitude modulation came into being. From there, frequency modulation came into being as well. Around the 1950s, they figured out that if you take an AM signal, a lot of the transmission power is not really going to any place useful. because the carrier doesn't contain any actual information. All the information about your voice is carried on the upper sideband and the lower sideband. And they discovered that through some rather clever electronics, they could strip the carrier and strip either the upper or the lower sideband and transmit only with an upper sideband for the upper HF frequencies and the lower sideband for the lower HF frequencies. And the person's receiver would inject the carrier signal back, and you would get a lot more punch for the power. So that was in the 50s, single sideband came on, but there are radios that don't do single sideband. Now, if it's doing single sideband, it's almost always capable of switching between upper sideband and lower sideband. But it would need to have a circuit built into it to work with single sideband in general. So it's very possible you could have a radio that does AM, it could do FM, certainly would do CW, but it doesn't do single sideband.
I can't hear you.
Yeah, we operate at 28.380 megahertz on upper sideband. On the 10-meter band, everyone who's operating single sideband operates upper sideband. So if you were able, if you could hear us and you didn't have single sideband, it would just sound like noise. It wouldn't be terribly intelligible. When I was a little kid, I only had a shortwave AM radio, transistor radio, but somehow I figured out that if I got another transistor radio's local oscillator and used it to inject a signal into that shortwave radio, it was the same way that single sideband receivers work, and it would heterodyne the two frequencies, and I could actually hear people talk. But that was a heck of a kludge. So you would hear noise. If you don't hear anything at 28.380 upper, even if you're doing AM, then chances are if you had an upper sideband capable radio, you wouldn't hear us either, you know, depending upon whether one was more sensitive than the other. Yes, Ed, you want to add on things? Ed, if you could use your better antenna, because you're about 80% noise.
All right, I'll hold back now.
Okay.
Yep, we're giving Ed a little chance to switch his antennas. He has a very nice antenna that gets right into the repeater.
All right,
WB3AD,
back.
Very good, Ed. So what do you have to add?
I missed what kind of receiver it is. If it's an AM receiver, sideband signal sounds like a duck quacking. Talking about a non-CAN transceiver, are you sure it has an SSB/CW capability? Can tune in either sideband, W or SSB capable SWR receiver, but offensive one, you can do both sidebands, but they're both a real pain to tune in.
Stop. Tell them your model. My understanding is it's an amateur radio, but it only has AM and CW, but I could be wrong. So, Ed, Sam, you want to tell them?
If it has CW, put it in CW mode.
Thank you. And I thought it was really a four-band tent. But I can hear you with no voice. That's a gross noise. I can see that needle jumping high enough up. Yes, I'm going right up in the attic. Got everything you touch to have. As a matter of fact, I went to 20 hours. I'm not upset.
Wait a minute. Is this set for AM reception? But you will hear my duck quacking.
Nope. And I don't hear nothing. Put it on a local group and just sound. I'm standing by a minute. Like I said, Roy, I'm not mad. A lot of fun. I had to get going.
Well, Sam, let me see if I have it. Okay, Sam, that's the best attitude. You know, have fun with it, because like I keep on saying, if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong. Otherwise, that's great. We're at 28.380, not 385. I think Ed was asking you what mode you were trying to use at the time. It sort of sounds like you were setting it up for FM. If you try and listen to a single sideband or an AM signal on FM, you're not going to get anything intelligible. So I think George recognized, by the way, but just for the sake of Ed's question, do you know what mode of modulation your receiver was set to when we're trying to listen to my 10-meter net?
No, I don't. But I'm going to try to find the manual. I have a dual receiver up in it. Another one.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that even if you can't hear us per se, if you switch your radio, if it's capable of being switched into AM, you'll hear a signal. I think what's going on is you have it switched into FM, and it's not breaking the squelch. So you see a signal, but you don't hear a signal, so that might be what's going on. Now, mind you, switching from FM to AM is not going to allow you to understand my dulcet tones, unfortunately, but at least it'll give you a slightly better sense of what single sideband sounds like listening on AM.
Okay, Roy.
Yeah, George, please, your comment.
Yes, Roy, he's probably working in FM. May have an AM receive mode between upper portion of broadcast and lower portion of 2 meter band. May only it's there, but I believe that quad bander only UFIU.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, George, you're right. I'm going to give it back to Roy. Roy, thank you for taking the thank you. I'll figure it out some kind of way. I got to learn more about this radio. I got to find the manual.
WB2BX.
Say again.
WB2BX.
Oh, okay. Good to hear you, Frank. It's very weird. I'm looking at the EchoLink window. It's a new version of EchoLink, and for some strange reason, it doesn't seem to have you listed as having linked. So that's confusing. Yeah, you wanted to say something about Sam's problem?
Yeah, first of all, you may be right in that he was sitting on an FM receiver, so he's not hearing anything on AM or sideband. My first reaction was maybe no or inadequate antenna. I realize, of course, in Brooklyn, having lived there for nearly 60 years before relocating to Philadelphia, that it's nearly impossible to have an adequate antenna. If you are able to go back to that at some point.
Sure, Frank. Once we finish up with Sam, I think we're coming to the end of his question, but I think it's nice that Sam said that he saw some signal, he didn't hear it. So my guess is it may be possible that he could maybe not hear me, but there are times that people in Queens transmit, so it's more likely he might hear people in Queens on the 10-meter net. So if he sees some kind of signal, even if he doesn't hear it because the squelch is on, You know, at some point in the future, if he's able to find a reasonably priced single sideband capable 10-meter radio and joins the club, I would love to have him check into our 10-meter net there.
Radio. And once I get my channel, I call radio. So then I'm happy that I'm good on my radio. Yes, I did so. I told me, oh, all right, I don't have a problem. Like I said, I'm happy. It is great.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that, Sam. I hope you remain a happy man. And again, you're very much welcome to join us on 10 meters when you're able to do so. I look forward to talking to you there. So be well, Sam. We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you. I'm clear.
Okie doke. Frank, you had a question you'd like to ask?
Okay, you know, somebody or something, maybe sounds like a radar pulse keying up the repeater, so echo link won't key. In any case, yeah, I was wondering at some point, and I apologize if you covered this another time when I wasn't listening. What is the difference in the technology being used for J&J vaccine that being used for Pfizer and Moderna? And a second question, if you have time, is like one of the things I've heard is that the technology used in Pfizer and Moderna, the mRNA technology, is going to supposedly totally revolutionize medicine. And I was wondering if you had any sense of in what areas that was going to be, or whether there were some specific applications in the works that you knew of now. Go ahead, Russ.
Okay. Well, Pfizer and Moderna use the basic underlying same principle. The Johnson & Johnson is a completely different one. The Pfizer and the Moderna both use messenger RNA. As I mentioned before, you might not have been here. They've been playing around with that for 20 years, but up until now, they have not really applied it successfully for any commercial venture to produce a vaccine. So we were very fortunate that both of those popped into existence. The beauty of using messenger RNA is you can transcribe a virus in a matter of days. People are doing it now all the time to figure out what variants are around. And by plugging that back in a design, they can generate messenger RNA encapsulated in little lipids. In the case of Moderna, there's another encapsulation technology in Pfizer, and introduce it into the human body. One of the big things that they're hoping that they can use this technology for, in addition, of course, to further vaccinations for different things, is that you can theoretically see where they might be able to develop genetic designer pseudo vaccines for cancers. Sometimes cancers will present with unusual protein on their surface. And if you can figure out what that is and transcribe it back into a messenger RNA vaccine-like agent, you can prime people's immune capability to fight their own cancers. So immunological anti-cancer technology is one of the holy grails that people would love to be able to use this technology for.
And how does in great layman's terms, if it's possible, how does the Johnson & Johnson vaccine differ? Is that a more traditional vaccine rather than an mRNA vaccine?
That's exactly the difference. It uses much more traditional virus-based technology. And that's why it took a little bit longer, because it takes a little bit longer to incorporate the right DNA sequences into that. So that's why it took longer. But the Moderna and the Pfizer, kind of remarkable. Both companies kind of took a slight risk because, again, it was unproven. And thankfully, it paid off. There were other pharmaceutical companies their vaccine technology because when they started to put it through phase one and phase two, it didn't pan out.
KC1SAM disconnected. W2KPQ.
Okay, sounds like you just lost the repeater in the network. Okay, well, thanks a lot. I'll be looking forward to Paul's report and, you know, the latest thoughts on what's happening with Starship. Thanks, Roy. Very interesting. WB2BX, via Echo Link from Northeast Philadelphia.
This is the reason why a lot of people don't want to take it, because technically it's still an untested substance.
Very interesting technical mess for me. I help make it interesting for you guys as well. So please think up some more interesting questions for next week, and let me summon forth WS2N Paul for the SpaceNet report.
Okay, Roy. Very good on all the topics tonight. Yes, WS2N. Yeah, I heard Frank asking about the Starship. And they're taking a couple steps back for now, by the way. They're trying to build the, Elon Musk is trying to build his the heavy booster. It's going to be like, I don't know, 250 feet tall. And you're going to take the Starship and put that on top of that, which is 160 feet tall. And it comes out about the same height as Apollo spacecraft. Apollo, 63 feet long, from the whole Saturn rocket from the top all the way to the top of the Apollo spacecraft. Now, he wanted to have this, different tanks. You got liquid oxygen and liquid methane. On the Starship, he's got the liquid oxygen on the bottom and he's got the liquid methane at the top. He wanted to reverse that with the booster part. He wanted to keep the liquid oxygen at the top and the liquid hydrogen, liquid methane at the bottom. But now they're throwing that whole idea out. So that means they're going to scrap at least one or two of the boosters that are in production. For some reason, they've switched. I haven't heard a reason yet, Frank, but why they did that. But that's going to put them a little behind the eight ball for a while. But it won't stop the testing and production of the Starship itself. They're up to Starship number 15, blown up four of them recently. Hopefully this next one doesn't blow up. Last I saw, they had it out at the launch pad, and they're getting ready to test the engine. And after that, if that's successful, when the results come back and everything's okay, they'll try to do the same thing, launch the SN-15 to 10,000 kilometers and see if they can bring it down 6 miles up and back down into the where it started from back in Texas. So, okay, let me drop it. That's the update on Starship, but if anybody wants to know what Starship is or anything like that, we usually talk about that quite a bit. That's the one that SpaceX is building, and ultimate goal is to really get to Mars, but temporarily they're going to use it for getting to the moon. NASA is just giving them a couple of $1 billion contract. I don't know if it's going to stand, but apparently they've agreed on it that SpaceX will bring them to the final leg, after the SLS, Space Launch System, and Orion launched four people to lunar orbit. The idea was to have another company or companies bring them down to the surface and bring them back up again and dock with Orion and then go back to Earth. That that way on Orion. But now they've chosen SpaceX to do that final step, which means they're flying out to the moon, meeting up with a SpaceX Starship, having the Starship land on the moon, bring them back up again, using that setup. We'll see how that goes. I don't know if it's going to change after the new administrator gets in there. Bill Nelson, who is picked, and I believe he's going to be confirmed probably this week. And we'll see if they keep that system that they've developed. I don't know if they're going to, my guess is they're going to keep it, and they're just going to add, you know, to it. I don't like usually to have one company involved. I like to have Blue Origin, they like to have Draper and Lockheed involved as well. That's the way it was, but they can cut out of the picture for now. Anyway, we'll talk about that as the weeks go by. But now, you had a launch recently, today, Sunday, what, 2 days ago on Friday morning, 10 to 6. They launched the second Dragon crew vehicle, four people, International Space Station. They've done this before. They've had four launch around 5.5 months ago. They're still on the space station, joined by another four Crew Dragon. So now you have those four joining the other four, and then there was another group up there from Russia. So anyway, you now have a total of 11 people on board the space station. Let's switch over to Roy. I'm sure it's all over NASA. And 11 people sitting in the Harmony node, one of the modules, essentially the front of the space station, and where they first come through the door. But they're sitting in the front, all 11 people, like that picture, NASA.gov, or maybe Roy will put it up on his website. And gives you an idea what 11 people in one module looks like. So they have enough sleeping quarters for 7 people on the station, and then the rest will find different locations. But one will probably go and sleep in the Dragon, and one of the Dragons, and another person probably in the other Dragon. And they also have the Quest Lab, that's the module where you would go and do a spacewalk. They camp out in there quite a bit, put another person there. Anyway, you have 11 people on board. Not for very long, because this week on the 28th, those four people I talked about that have been up there about 5.5-6 months, returning. Water went up by Shane Kimbrough, who was the commander, Megan MacArthur, and Kellogg. OSHEED, and then Space Agency Thomas Pusket, or Thomas as they pronounce it. He's from England. Those are the four that went up there. The guy from England working robotic arm that's going to be delivered in a couple of months, probably with about the Russians. The Russians are sending up a brand new module, very big module, to send up in 12 years, no year. That module docked to one of the Earth-facing ports, a near port, up for them. And involved with that is going to be a robotic arm that has to be installed on that. It's already there, but Tomas will be one of the people involved in activating that new robotic arm as well. So the space station actually is still growing, little by little. Hopefully it will stay that way until around at least 30. So you do have four people coming back on the 28th month. 2 days from now is Shannon Walker, Gal Hopkins, Victor Glover, Noguchi. All four were hams, by the way, starting landing in the Atlantic Ocean. And if there's a bad there, they have an option to also land in the Gulf of Mexico. Water just went up, went on a spacecraft that was previously used last May, around a year ago. Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley went up. Bob Behnken was a ham, but Doug wasn't. But they went up in May. They were the first crew to actually go up in a space station Dragon vehicle. SpaceX had went up previously before that without a crew, just to see if everything would work. All autonomous. Docked with the space station, undocked, back and landed there successfully. After that, last May, two fellows went up, Doug Curley and Bob Behnken. They stayed only for a couple of months, returned, and now you have two more launches. Then what's going to happen is they're going to be back down to a seven-person crew on the space station. And they're the 28. And the spacecraft that they went up on is all reusable. This one had gone up previously on that first test mission, the Behnken and Hurley, second time space station for that spacecraft, and also the booster that they were launched on was a previously launched booster as well. I believe it's the same booster that launched Hurley and Behnken up as well. Both boosters came back successfully. They landed on the drone ship, and then they towed back to Florida, where they're going to be refurbished again. Usability is really getting good. He's got one booster that has been actually reused 9 times. And very shortly, that will be the first one to be used 10 times. That was their goal. When they built this group, this iteration of block of Falcon 9 boosters for the Block 5 and designed to last up to 100 flights, 10 flights, and they refurbish it, 10 flights, going like that. With earlier iterations, it would only last, maybe flights, I think they called out it was 4 flights on one. This WS2M. Okay, most popular space topic that's on TV for the last week is story of Ingenuity. Yeah, helicopter that's been flying on Mars. Last week, right after the net, 3 o'clock in the morning, our time, they tested it, and it flew straight up and came back down again. Girl was going to make it, and now I can report that it was very successful. It did exactly that. It took off, it actually rotated 96 degrees, back, straight back down again. Perseverance rover that brought it up there, and pictures of it, doing exactly what I just said. The helicopter itself has 2 cameras. One camera looking straight down with a black and white camera that takes pictures up to 30 times a second. Not the video, but the picture is being sent to the processor. Due to inside, the small helicopter is looking at pictures, figuring out from the pictures where it is every 1/30th of a second. The picture figures out where it is, where it's going to. It's all pre-programmed before it takes off. So I thought it was just going to be happy talking about one flight that took place last week at the time. But since then, there's been 2 more flights that are up to 3 flights already. And the flight is getting more and more daring. Second flight went straight up, and then it translated, I think, about 10 feet or so, a couple of feet back to the same location, straight back down again. Then this last one went up to much higher height. Well, I think the last one was first one was 10 feet. The second one was, I think, 15 feet and 17 feet as well. Then this one translated about 150 feet, like half the distance of a football field in a direction, and then came back straight down again. They plan on 2 more flights. Where they go, and that should probably happen pretty quick. That might be finished by next week. Yeah, they do. But each time they're sticking that neck out, going further and further, seeing how much this little helicopter can take. Ingenuity is $25 million to build this thing. Did there one clip that showed me there were about 8 different motors, small helicopter. Helicopter is it's a cute small. On Earth, it weighs, 4.5 pounds. Mars is like 1/3 of that, so it's very light. Has this tremendous computer processing ability. Got 2 cameras on board. Got 2 rotators. The rotators are counterclockwise from one another, 4 feet long, end to end. So the radius is 2 feet. To get this thing to spin up, very high rate. Helicopter on Earth, I think it's around 300 or so RPM. here is over 2,000. They go around 2,300. They could adjust that depending on density of the atmosphere, change that, if you program that in. See, there's stepper motors. Anyway, there's 8 different motors for them to do this. There's one, you know, you could imagine one blade over the other blade. On the bottom blade, one motor, and that's one direction. On the top of the top blade, you know, looking down, that's where the second motor is. So it's like a sandwich. The bottom motor, followed by a blade, followed by a blade, followed by another blade, followed by another motor looking down. And that's how they do it. They could adjust the speeds of each one independently. By doing that, they could adjust the tilt, go forward, left, right, you know, exactly which direction they're going to go and how fast they're going to go. On top of that, they have servos. Each blade has 3 servo motors to it to adjust, I guess, the tilt and, you know, laid individually, have linkages attached to them. And so you have 3 servo motors attached to one blade, 3 to another, and then you have the big motor on the bottom, top, then the blade suddenly. They have a total of 8 motors on this one little 1.5 pounds on Mars, but, you know, doing all this work. Plus, it's transmitting back on 915 megahertz back to and through their Perseverance rover. Helicopters are roving at, you know, 915 megahertz. That gives them around a 3,300-foot range. Rover is transmitting up to one of the satellites that are in orbit around Mars. I like using most is MRL, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. The choice of using MAVEN, another NASA spacecraft that's in orbit. We also use Odyssey, which is still functional. We also have the capability of using one of the European space agencies' satellites called Mars Express, which is also in orbit around Mars. The other ones, they don't need to do a borrow. There's one by here in orbit around Mars called MOM, there by the United Arab Emirates called HOPE. That's in a highly elliptical orbit. We're going to use that one. And, of course, then there's China. China has a spacecraft now in orbit around. A lot of stuff flying around Mars besides the Tumunos and Bobos. Now you have all these different satellites. And all we care about is one right now is tomorrow to Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter to relay that video and even audio to microphones that are located on Perseverance rover. So I think we're going to do this on a third flight. Maybe they did, and I just haven't read it yet. You know, it's new. That just happened this morning when I'm putting the microphones on, or microphone, to see if they can hear the blades they have on. But he said they'll do it, on the 4th or 5th, if they haven't done it already. That should be interesting to hear, getting the audio back. Anyway, that comes back, I guess, that it's all transmitted back from Perseverance to the MRO, and they use UHF for that, 70 centimeter radio. And then they transmit from MRO back to the Deep Space Network on Earth on the X band, which is 8 gig, a little over 8 gig. I don't have the exact frequency, but that's roughly what they transmit back to. This is WS2N for any questions or comments. Based on report for the TechNet.
Yeah, Paul, I think there was a third flight yesterday or today. I know I saw a preliminary picture on TV, but I don't think they mention anything about downloading audio. They just not have downloaded the audio yet.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Frank. An earlier news conference that they had, it takes a day or two, a couple of days to get all the information back. First thing they get back is the data information. Hello. Took off, how high it went, one way or the other, rotating. You have black and white pictures back from the mapping camera on the bottom, so they but that went well. A couple of them have the pictures of the shadow of Newity flying, but it's right above them. They've been doing this around noon, mod time. So, you know, you know that picture. That's the one that's not at 30 frames per second. And after that, you'll get either a picture from Perseverance of the, you know, take a picture of the light. And video comes back, they say the video is 56 frames per second on that. But you stand at 30 frames, you see how you think. Back to 6 frames per second, which is good enough to. And also there's a camera on the, we haven't seen a picture of, they haven't caught a picture of Perseverance in the background yet. I'm waiting to see if that ever comes up. I did see, you know, a couple of pictures from the helicopter looking down. Tracks of Perseverance is driven. Haven't captured the rover yet. Rover is sitting about a couple hundred feet away. 750 feet away from the helicopter. So that's the story on that. And we'll look forward to seeing what happens with this and drop it. Anyway, I was talking about China before with their spacecraft going around Mars. That went into orbit around the same time as Perseverance entered the atmosphere, same week. They were all launched around the same time, so they're going to begin in July. And it took, you know, 6 months to get there. Like I said, Perseverance landed February 18th. China, their spacecraft went into orbit around the same time, days before Perseverance got there. Anyway, it's got really three spacecraft in one, an orbiter. And shortly, I think within a week or two, definitely within a month of May, they plan on sending a lander down to Mars. So China will, if they do that, there'll be another country that successfully has done it. We're really the only ones that have successfully done that. That we, I mean, NASA. Russians landed something, and I think it lasted for 20 seconds or something. They never got any science or anything out of it. Go. China should be very happy about that. And then on top of that, inside this lander that they have a rover, solar-powered rover. Talking about solar panels before. So they plan on driving around the Mars surface. I think they planned on a three-month capability on their rover. Their 3 months turns out to be anything like our 3 months. We had, you know, Spirit rode around for over 6 years. Opportunity ran around for 12 years before it quit. Pretty amazing. You get a lot of power out of these solar panels. They constantly recharge the lithium-ion batteries. Batteries have hooked up the heaters, warm electronic boxes, warm. Going as long as the panels stay clear, stay that way. Dust storm came, and so much dust got onto the solar panel that eventually quit everything, clock everything, and it just never back to life again. Now we have the opportunity, but nothing's going to stop the other two rovers that are up there, Curiosity, riding around with their RPG, and Perseverance also an RPG, a radioisotope thermoelectric generator. You see the back end of the vehicle kind of looks the same. It looks like a dovetail sticking up. Kinds of tubing and everything, where a bit of heat, actually too much heat, being created by the RPG. Nuclear power thing is able to power the rover not only in the daytime, but recharging the batteries, so that has some capability at night as well. Dust storms are not going to stop. In fact, there was a dust storm during our Curiosity when Opportunity quit. Curiosity just kept on going. Anyway, that's pretty much all I have for that. I just wanted to mention one other launch that's going to be going up in a day or two. And I'll be going up, the Russians will be sending up another batch of satellites for OneWeb. OneWeb is a group that's planning a broadband system, thousands of satellites. I think they they could do it with around 800 or maybe 1,000 or more than that satellites for one web, launch around 36 at a time, using different rockets to do it. In this case, it's going to use the Soyuz rocket from Russia's new launch facility in Voskochny, not real far east in Russia. Go any further east, you'll winding up close to Alaska. So they built a brand new launch complex, launch port down there, and on eventually have multiple launch facilities there. Plan on building like a town, and you know, right now it's like hardly anybody living there, and by the time they're done, they're going to have a town of 50,000 people, Voskochny. So anyway, they have a launch there another day or two. Yeah, they do. That'll be a competition for not only SpaceX, their broadband system, Starlink. They got a little bit over 1,000, I think it's 3,000 satellites up there, launching 60 at a batch. And they plan on just keep doing it. They're getting an okay from the government to add more once they get up to at least 4,000 satellites in the beginning. So start selling contracts to a beautiful home tied into the system. You're going to charge like $99 a month, and you have to buy like a $500 antenna from him for installing. And also there's other competition that from Amazon, from Jeff Bezos. He's got it's called the Kuiper broadband system. He plans on launching thousands of satellites up as well. He's got a contract with Boeing and Lockheed. He's got five rockets to start launching his satellites. They're manufacturing up in the state of Washington. That should be interesting. Competition between three groups. You know, there's a couple more to plan on doing this at one point. We won't even be able to see the stars, I think. This is WS2N. Any comments or questions?
Yes, WB2VF cell
pole. WB2VXO. Go ahead, Frank. WS2N.
Yeah, my thought is intuitively, it's to me like the difficulty with Starship is probably that the engines aren't adequately developed. I watched Everyday Astronaut on YouTube explaining the math behind the belly flop and behind the hover slam that seems to land the Falcon 9 booster. And, I mean, we know the hover slam works. They land those things about 90% of the time. And the way he explains this, it sounds like the math behind the belly flop is sound. He tried to explain, you probably saw the video, he tried to explain the math in layman's terms that don't require knowledge of calculus, which I think is kind of hard to do. But I appreciate it. I don't remember any calculus. But, you know, my thought is the engine just aren't adequately developed. It sounds a little bit like the early days of jet engine development. What do you think, Dad?
Yeah, well, Raptor engines have been developing these things for, I guess, about 8 years now. Got a lot of test time on them. It's new technology. The liquid methane instead of RP-1. RP-1 is kerosene. So that's new technology there, so I guess that could be giving him trouble too. Although I haven't read anything that he's got problems with the engine. So if that guy Tim, Frank's talking about the Everyday Astronaut. Well, you have to put it in YouTube, Everyday Astronaut, and this guy will come on. And he's really good. I mean, young fella from Iowa. Really knows his stuff. Pretty good. He'll let you know everything you possibly know about Starship, that's for sure. He'll talk about other space stuff too, but he's really into the Starship program. I know that just against Starship in the end, he needs different types of Raptor engines. Three that are optimum for regular atmosphere here, and then he's got three vacuum Raptor engines that will be eventually put on there. So you, right now he's only launching with three. Eventually he's going to add another three. Three will be more important for getting to actual orbit when, you know, maneuvering in orbit. Whether he actually launches from the Earth and goes into orbit, I think he would rather be using the booster, the heavy, the 30 feet diameter, 100 feet high.